You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Financial Ineptitude presents Two Bulls in a China Shop. You can find our podcast at twobullsinachinashop.com or just search Two Bulls in a China Shop wherever you stream your podcasts. Well, hello and welcome to the China Shop. It's a special fire sale. We got the doors wide open because it is the June month in review episode.
Everything must go.
Everything must go. I'm shopkeeper Dan. With me, as always, is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. Kyle's celebrating a big promotion this month. Oh, God, we just bumped him up to zombie team leader here in the China Shop. How are you doing today, Kyle?
Excellent. Hungry.
Hungry, right? That's why we got you in charge of them zombies. Got to eat them brains.
Damn right. Yes, and.
Yes, and. We're so glad you've joined us here in the shop. It's the moment we've all been waiting for, the arrival of Papa George. How you doing, George?
Well, that's the best intro I've ever received. Thank you.
Oh, it gets better. It gets better.
Grab all the zombies in the place with style and grace. Allow him to beat these simple douches in their pushes. Who smacks ass can mix cash with all the mammies. The back of the club, fighting lines is where you'll find him. The back of the club, tracking flows is screws behind him. Mad questions asking, no passing, market blasting. But he just can't quit because one of these funkies Poppy's got to teach with. Short with, keep the port a secret. Why not? Why blow up my stock? Cause the price got dropped. Now check it, he got more ask than buyers at the bid. Believe me, sweetie, he teach enough to feed the needy. No need to be greedy. He got mad friends with Benzes. See notes by the layers. True fucking traders. Jump in the chat room and command him. Tell your friends, take a course or three. He at the Pro Academy. The trade bros all just call him George Papa. Throw them charts in the air if you're a risk slayer. The trade bros all just call him George Papa. To the friendlies getting tendies, playing entries like hedgies. The trade bros all just call him George Papa. You got a phone up in your hands, please don't call for a car. Wow. Cause George has got the profits to take that should buy a Mercedes. Mercedes.
That's so good. My neck hurts. I was like going along with it. I was like, oh yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I listened to that.
Wow, that was fantastic. I think I think there needs to be an award given out for the best jingle there.
We'll get you a copy of that. I think Dan made a edited version because I don't know if you guys are
dropping F bombs
or are as explicit as us. Yeah.
We support that by all means. I mean, it's so good.
True fucking traitors.
Yeah. It's so good. How could you deny it? You know, it's
thank you. Thank you. Very, very awesome. Kind.
I appreciate that. I know it took work, and thank you.
It's not work if you love it, right?
Yeah, we had a good time.
And I'm honored. You know, Biggie, great rapper. I listened to a lot of his stuff in the past, actually.
Right.
All right. Well, okay. Kyle and I are so excited to have you on.
Yes.
Because we have been taking these Trade Pro courses, and I've told to Kyle, like, I feel like I'm binging TV. I'm not, like, watching anything educational. Like, I want this knowledge so greatly. And I value it so much that it's like I'm just Netflix binging. I'm like, yeah, let's play the next one. Let's do the next one.
I've had to slow myself down and rewatch several of them just to make sure that those lessons did sink in, especially the candle patterns and chart patterns.
Yeah.
I had to slow that down. I was like, yeah, you didn't get it all in one shot, Kyle. You got to do this again.
Well, you know what? I love to hear that, though, because, you know, how much time do we spend watching other content that doesn't really help us or support us? So I love that it's got the binge-worthy factor. You know, I thank you. That's it's a really big compliment. That's kind of what we go for when we create this stuff.
It's much better than Jersey Shore. I could tell you that from experience.
Don't blow up my head too much now. It's kind of right.
Well, there's been a couple things that we learned. We actually added two new rules to our list from this past month, and both of them, I think, come from what we've learned directly from the lessons. Number one, Dan and I were just talking about the mistakes that we made with Celsi, trying to jump in and fighting momentum and then just getting killed on it.
Yeah,
that's don't fight momentum is now rule number six. And then the next one is one that I want to talk a little bit more about, and that's earnings calls are gambling and trade pros don't gamble. I think that was specifically mentioned in a lesson that I watched right after I decided to gamble on Micron earnings.
How timely, right?
And that seems to be the thing. I don't know if it's just confirmation bias, like, you know, you learn a lesson that immediately applies the next day.
Yeah.
Or if it's it really is just working out that way.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that goes into play with that, right? It's like, it's a gamble because you don't really know what the news is going to be. And if you do, it's illegal. So it's like, you don't really win with any one of those two scenarios. But it's like, it's also the way options work with the volatility premium. You know, the Vega gets pushed up a lot and then there's the Vega flush right afterward. And we've had people email us, you know, the stock's up 10%. How come my call option's not doing good?
Right.
I'm like, well, you just learned Vega flush and why, you know, trading earnings is so dangerous. So I love both those rules, especially the first one there, not fighting against the trend. It's like, it's amazing how much money people have to lose, including me, to learn that lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like you get slapped in the face and you're like, okay, I'm not going to do it again. But then a few days pass, like, you know what, maybe it kind of looks appealing again. You get slapped again. It's like,
right.
I've been abused by going against the trend, and it took me a long time to actually figure out, you know, it's always easier to make, no matter how much you think it's gone up, it's always easier to get another couple dollars on the trend side than being able to predict the exact reversal moment, you know?
That's funny because Sarah, I think when we had her on, talked about how great you are at picking bottoms.
Yeah. Well, there's a saying, bottom pickers get smelly fingers.
Oh, really?
So, gross. Yeah, it is a pretty gross one. But when you use order flow, like we take it one step a bit deeper, when you could see every institutional order in real time, you know, there is an ability to pick those moments. But I think that the thing about those moments is being able to cut your risk. It's like picking the bottom, not because you didn't get on one side and you need it to go the opposite way to make money, but picking the bottom because you have an edge and finding how the orders are flowing through the market in real time. I think those are two different things, right? One is like hope and like FOMO, and the other one is more of an edge as a strategy. So I do tend to be good at the reversals, but the reversals are much more emotional in nature. Like anytime you're going against a trend, even if you got a strategy with an edge, it always feels, I don't know, more wrong, I guess I would say. Like, there's always more risk on the line.
I think part of my issue with the mistakes that we made with sell side was not necessarily the what you're saying right there. Is more of a, I know I'm right, I can't be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not wanting to admit that I wasn't right. Does that make sense? Yeah.
The market's wrong, damn it.
Yeah, I read this. Yeah. This is good news. Why are they not reacting the way I think they should?
The market will eventually see it like I do. It'll just take a few days.
Right.
Yeah.
After half of the value sold off. It suddenly becomes attractive again. Yes.
Yeah, well, a lot of, you know, like we're raised as human beings, we're taught about having to be right, right? Like we're evaluated at school, we get grades, there's a right way and a wrong way to do stuff. And and I think that kind of spills over into trading as well. It's like, it's vindicating, it's empowering when you're both right and you make money. But a lot of times I made money when I was wrong and I still was able to capitalize on it. So I think,
right,
you know, that's a lesson that when you learn, you start to turn the corner from just getting started in the business to saying, hey, I could probably make this a career. Because it gives you confidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not a doc. Like, if somebody went to a surgeon that had the same win rate as my trades, I would question their decision making. Like, like, this is a pretty standard procedure and operation. You know, every other doctor, 99% success rate, I got 40 lay on the table.
Right.
It's like, thank God I don't have to be right, guys. Like, that's one of the most beautiful things in this industry.
Ah, man, I just had a thought too, and I lost it. You just start writing this shit down.
Right. Because the one thing that's on my mind, if Kyle doesn't have a question queued.
Go for it.
I've been looking at this stock, REI, Ring Energy, and they're like a petroleum oil company. And I know you'd spoken about how when markets cycle rotation occurs, the, you know, utilities is something that tends to do well in a bear market. And I'm trying to make some like small positions to have something that I think would be growing in a bear market. But I don't know if REI is an oil company or not.
Yeah, we actually had a discussion on that in the last podcast, speculation over whether or not that would technically fall under the same category as like energy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, power companies or cell phones or the kind of stuff that's, you know, like a need or essential these days.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, a utility company is anything that even if you lost your job, you wouldn't cut off, you mm-hmm. know, like your electric bill, your water bill, et cetera. Your cell phone is also considered utility communications is key.
Right.
Well, oil actually tends to be a high performer during a high inflation market and towards the ending stage of a bull market. So some people would say right now would really? Be yeah. Yeah, the heyday of oil, because as inflation picks up, you know, the cost of goods, one of the biggest drivers of inflation is energy and food. Mm-hmm. And so much so that the index just excludes them. It's called the core. And then there's a headline one, and the core excludes food and energy because they're so volatile. But if you look at it, you know, from really far back from an economic standpoint, oil is usually the last thing to rally before bear market begins. And so some might argue that what's going on right now in the oil market is a part of that. It's the last kind of commodities in general, not just oil as well, are the last ones to benefit mm-hmm. before we turn over into a bear market.
So Michael Burry might be right.
Yeah. I mean, geez, it's not just the short. He was, you know, it's the big short.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that guy's made a career of being contrarian and doing extremely well. And I think it's been so long since the market has experienced a downside mm-hmm. that's continued for longer than, because, you know, every dip's been bought and there is a difference.
Right.
And a bear market always starts as, hey, I'm going to buy this dip. And then you lose money and say, hey, I'm going to add a little bit more to this dip. And then one day everyone wakes up with like grapefruit eyes and that's the beginning of the bear market. No one could really call the top of the bull.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens when buying the dip stops working. And we really have been... It's been a long time since that. If you take it back to when that started, it was 2009.
Right.
When at the time, Ben Bernanke released a TARP package, a Troubled Asset Relief Program, and bought a whole bunch of mortgages. And the Fed has still to this day been in the market, continuing to buy and provide stimulus. So
crazy.
You know, it's been a long period without a prolonged downside move.
Yeah, because even that March when the coronavirus happened, that sprung back. I think that was one of the quickest recoveries from that size of a drop that I think the market's ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was, when Corona happened, like I thought that there would be a little bit more carnage than there was. I wasn't necessarily, you know, a doomsday caller by any means, but I just thought that it would cause a little more of a bear market, not as fast to the downside, but more prolonged. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Corona is a one-off event that, you know, it's a pandemic. So when the pandemic ends, you know, the economy starts to rebuild and it's easy to start being optimistic again versus like the last one was a housing market collapse.
Yeah. Right.
Right. A lot more like systematic in nature and a lot more scary, which is why it took so long to get through it.
I think some of it too was the combination of you have all these people who've been quarantined at home, who can't go to work, have all this free time with the economic stimuluses they're getting. You know, extra money, some of them on a weekly basis, they lost their job, you know, up to $600 more than they were making before.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those people just started pumping all their money into the stock market too. I think retail has taken on a much larger, at least the percentage of capital being introduced into the market has gone up significantly from that event. And that might've helped prop it up too.
Yeah. Retail volume exploded, right? And you bring up a really good point. It's like, we're in an economic recovery at the moment, but it's an economic recovery defined by a lack of being able to find employees. There's a labor shortage out there.
I know.
Yeah. Because if you're going to get paid, you know, $18 an hour to work or $16 to sit at home and watch Netflix, like that's an easy choice, you know, yep. for most people.
I don't think that's a choice.
Yeah, exactly. It's an obligation at that point. I'm obligated, right, to stay at home and watch Netflix. But I think there's danger in that, right? Because mm-hmm. where is this money coming from? It's tax payments and it's a temporary situation. Like this is, and some people have called it the beginning of universal basic income and
you right. know,
some people with tinfoil hats, but at the end of the day, like everything's got a cost. So providing this continued, you know, guarantee of income, guarantee of landlords taking the beating for people who aren't paying the rent. Cause there's mm-hmm. that eviction moratorium that was extended till the end of July, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I got lucky on my house.
Yeah,
having good renters that didn't take advantage of that.
And this is where risk management was key, right? Because I'm sure you could have leveraged and mm-hmm. you know, taken a HLOC or like a line of credit and bought another property in a third. But then that's how the whole cards crumble as well. So that's prudent risk management, I think, on that note.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And this is going to get a lot off topic, but...
keep going. It's fine. It's all fine.
I've looked at the population demographic of the United States, like the way... If you look at it by age, you'll see there's like a huge mushroom top at the 65 plus.
Yeah.
People aren't having kids at the same rate that they used to do when those baby boomers were just exploded after the war. I have a hard time believing that there's going to be the shortage of housing continuing once they start to, you know, move on.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I'm a real estate investor as well, actually. Victoria from Trade Pro Academy and Sarah are a lot more into building longer term portfolios. I just funnel out the money and buy real estate. And that is something that you kind of look at and you're like, well, my saying has always been this, and I don't, you know, it's not a family friendly term, but hey, maybe it is. Maybe you teach your kids about this early. As I say, as long as people keep having sex, there's going to be a need for housing.
Right.
You know, yeah. But we're seeing that people aren't as much. They're being more prudent in family planning, you know, and they're waiting for the right times. There's a lot of different things that are at play here that, you know, I think is being underrepresented in the price of the S&P 500. You know, I think there's bigger tail risks than the market is pricing in, and I think they're being ignored.
Mm-hmm.
But the market, and I've been doing this since 2001. I started my career during the tech crash. And I'll tell you one thing. I know that when things seem like they're being ignored and it's the happiest, most opportunistic market, that's when you're kind of the closest to things snapping and reverting back. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
That sounds like euphoria, right?
Yeah, exactly. And boys, they got a nasty way of wiping out a lot of long-term value that was gained in a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So how's that for doomsday? Yeah, right. We got dark, guys.
There's going to be no people. There's going to be no money.
I'm going to buy calls on the VIX, right? The VXX.
Oh, yeah. VIX call spreads are great in that time. You know, XLU, the ETF for the utilities, is really good. It's just going back to, you know, the things that you can't go without.
Mm-hmm.
Utilities, and also gold tends to get a little bit more bullish in downside situations. Gold's actually an interesting asset because it gets hit first with equities that are positive correlation.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the fear builds, it starts to climb back up in a bullish cycle.
Has a gold been kind of getting beat up lately, though?
Yeah, gold's getting clobbered, right? It's gold's an inflation thing too. It's a protection against inflation. But the one asset that I think is really interesting for the next, you know, pullback, or I don't want to use the word crash because it freaks people out, but there is going to be another 10, 15, 20% drop. It happens. It's all cyclical.
Yeah.
I think the next asset that's super exciting is Bitcoin.
Right.
I think Bitcoin's got a chance here to prove itself. Like, are you going to be a equity positive correlated asset, or are you going to be a safe haven where people are going to go to when other things are dropping in value?
Yeah, we've been speculating on that too as well, thinking that it might be taking giving a gold a run for its money as the next inflationary hedge.
Yeah, I honestly, this whole Bitcoin thing, I've been scratching my head since it broke like 10,000. Like in the same spot of my head too. It's almost going to bleed. It's like, I know.
we've had so many crypto guests on, and I've asked every single one of them, "What is it? What does it do?"
and you're going to get a lot of like technical answers, right? Like some of them probably start spitting out equations and stuff. It's like, no, I get it. But like Dennis Gartman, who I used to get access to his subscription when I worked as a trader at the bank. And so anyways, he was horrifically wrong in his calls, but he had really good like sayings. And one thing he said was, I like to own things that if I drop on my foot will hurt. Right. And with Bitcoin, I don't really know what I'm dropping on my foot. And actually, we have a little Bitcoin in the office that's like a gold coin that's like encased in a little plastic thing. It looks very official. And one time for fun, I went around our neighborhood and I'm like, would you guys like a Bitcoin? And like, they were like, wow, no way, you're going to give this to us? Like, you don't even know what it is. You don't know that this has absolutely no value. And everyone is like excited to receive it. I bought this on eBay for like $2.
Right.
But it's perplexing, but I think that's part of what makes it exciting at the same time, you know?
Yeah, and it's definitely to the point now where you can't ignore it. I've definitely changed my tune.
Yeah, exactly.
NFTs are a whole nother thing. I still think those are digital Beanie Babies.
Yeah, I mean, Vicky and I had that discussion. It's like, look, it's becoming institutional, is getting a stake in it. It's becoming time where, like, we got to try some of it. And I think it's at a good enough price right now where you could give it a shot. We bought a little, like, wallet. And I was like, man, I think this is the first, you know what it is about Bitcoin? I think that I was a little bit hesitant about is it's making me feel old.
Right. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just not willing to accept that my wallet is a USB key and that, you know, like, I don't know.
My day, wallets were real physical things you kept in your pocket. It had paper strips of money.
The phones had cords. And
yeah, exactly. You know, but hey, you know, maybe I'm just, maybe it's me. I'm okay with that.
No, I'm with you 100%.
How do we get to this dark corner of the web, Ray?
I don't know.
Hey, Kyle, you want to talk about some charts?
No, I want to jump into something else real quick before we do that. Last time we had George on, we were, I think it was right in the middle of the GameStop saga.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it's true.
So that's kind of played out some more. So I'm curious if you've got any new insights on what's going on there.
GameStop,
is it done? Is it over?
GameStop is just a roller coaster, right? It's like, I don't know. It's like bringing a kid to a theme park and then he goes through the roller coaster and gets scared, gets excited, gets back to the beginning. He's like, again. And they go through it and it's like, you know, you're just sitting there like, when are you going to get bored? And it's like, let's eat a funnel cake. And then you're throwing up on the roller coaster. It's like, it's a very polarizing stock still. Like, look, I was wrong about it. I honestly thought GameStop would end up going like $50 and staying there. The fact it's at $202 and now considering that it might be included into some big indices, now it starts to get life because these other institutions need to buy it to replicate the index.
Right.
And I think from an indexing point, there's a lot of value. I think it, you know, they've gone through some executive changes. They've tried to get on the crypto wagon as well and like announce they're doing what a good company would do with an influx of new capital. They issued new shares. You know, they basically got paid with the situation. It's like, it isn't just the person buying it, call options profiting now. It's GameStop raking in like a ton of money on the secondary and IPO markets. So, I think this company's got a chance to kind of innovate and become something different in the future than what it is. And I never thought that would happen. I thought, look, it's just like traders are creating a short-term opportunity for price appreciation. But I didn't really see value in it. I do see value in their plan in the future, but I still don't understand it, to be honest with you guys. Like, you know,
their plan?
It just like the whole, the way it was driven up and then back down, you know, it's like,
oh, you mean just the price movement in general?
Yeah, it scares me. In terms of like an investment, I think the risk of the price, of the volatility in it, I think is not attractive to me. And I know for some people it is that are looking for big moves, but I think that to make this a career in the long term, you got to remove sexy out of it.
Right.
And I still see the stock as sexy, right? It's like, you know, you could wake up and it could be up 50,000 of your profit or down 50,000. And it's like, that's a good way to still check if your heart is beating, but there's cheaper ways to do that. And look, I don't know. I'm not going to criticize anyone if they believe in the value in the plan of this stock in the future. You know, who knows? Maybe it does become $1,000 stock. But like for me, you know, I think the retail boom and then the retail bust has played out. And now we're kind of going back to the money's left in there is who believes in it, right? Because there was a lot of stories where people made a ton of money and then we didn't really hear about the ones where they lost some because not as many people are open to posting that. I mean, they are.
Nobody wants to post. Well, they
on Reddit.
Wall Street Bets is a different thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, but I think that in history, we'll look at this as like the influence of retail investors on the market, and there's going to be storylines around it. But it's, I think now it just kind of becomes a stock that, you know, if you're looking for sexy, yeah, you can get chopped up in it. But if you're looking for an investment opportunity and you believe in the long-term prospects, it could still be worth a shot. I think like 150 to 175 or so is a really good support level there. And I'd be inclined to take a shot if I believe in the vision of the company.
Do you, the question is, do you believe in Ryan Cohen?
To be honest with you, I haven't done as much research. And I guess, yeah, like, I mean, at this point, that's what the bet ultimately is, right? It's
right.
It, and that's the thing about putting so much, you know, it scares me to believe in one thing so much. I know that we need.
Yes, yes.
Right? It's like, I'd rather disperse the capital I have into multiple opportunities and go all in on one thing because if if this thing falters and falls apart, like Ryan's not going to take my call. Like, hey, Ryan, what happened to my money? Ryan doesn't care. He's going to be on a yacht somewhere doing his thing. So, you know, I think this is a good learning lesson to a lot of investors too. Like, hey, look, there's opportunities. There's huge opportunities, but you don't have to take this profile of risk to generate that kind of return.
Yeah.
And I think one of the main things that came from the first discussion we had was, I think you were pleading with people on message boards to take some profit. Please, dear God, take some profit. So GameStop was kind of an interesting animal, right? It was like the main driver of this was just a stock that had incredible short interest, like over 100%. AMC is kind of the next one that everyone's talking about. Mm-hmm. It's kind of right in the middle of it right now. But AMC, I feel like, is a different animal. It never had the same amount of short interest. But the more that I've been learning about who, where the buyers and sellers are in the market, like institutions basically selling to retail investors at the top. That's who's getting paid. And they're buying from retail when it bottoms out. And I think with AMC, what we've seen is a different dynamic. It's a dynamic where retail has decided to get together and say, you know what, screw it, we're not selling.
Yeah, exactly. And if no one's willing to sell, then the price is probably going to continue to go up as long as there's enough people willing to buy it as well, right? Because going to say, if you have something like a bicycle and you're like, this thing's so special because my grandma gave it to me, but no one's willing to pay you money for it, it doesn't really matter what it's worth in your heart.
Right.
It's a hunk of junk, you know? Sorry, grandma, but... but yeah, that's my view. AMC's got a different kind of prospect to me. I think they're in the right business. I think COVID hasn't really been friendly to them. And I look at it and it's another one of those things that's gone up to about $72. And I kid you guys not, the guy that delivers mail to our house, I'm going to protect, I almost said his name, but let's just call him John.
Right.
Right. John and I, he always asked me, what do you think about AMC? It was trading at $12. And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, look, you can make a ton of money with it, but I really don't know. I wouldn't put like an outsized percentage of my capital into it. I'd give it a shot. Like, if you like a sexy stock, put a certain percentage in, but don't make it like your biggest holding. And he's like, all right, cool, man. And then like 2 weeks later, he told me, or 2 weeks ago, he's like, yeah, man, I made like $50,000 on that position.
Oh my God.
And I'm like,
did he make $50,000 or is he up?
Well, that's 50, what I asked him. I'm like, did you sell it? And he's like, well, not yet. I'm like, well, John, you didn't make, can I swear? Like,
yeah,
you didn't make shit, John. You got your bank holding in a few weeks. And then I saw him a week later. He's like, yeah, man, you know what? I sold my initial investment and I took quite a bit of profit. I got 10% of the position running. I'm like, you know what? That's good.
Oh, that's really good. Yeah. Good for him.
And yeah, when you look at people who, you know, I mean, I'm not bashing the guy. He's a smart individual. Actually, he does a lot of research. But when you look at the mailman making that kind of money, it's like, this feels a little bit like 2001 did for me. And I know that a lot of people in the markets really don't have that background knowledge because there's a lot of retail volume that exploded after COVID because everyone's home. They're getting stimmy checks. You know, what can I do from home?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sports are off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I'm either becoming a cam boy or cam girl, or I'm going to learn to trade stocks. I'm like, I'm happy people chose stocks. Like, retail volume's boomed.
Oh, I chose Camboy, but it just didn't stick. Couldn't get the subscribers.
And that's where I guess you learn. It's like something's only worth what people are willing to pay for it.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Learned auction theory quick.
Yeah.
Well, the reason why I brought up, the reason why I wanted to talk about AFC again was because we did learn our lessons, I feel like, from GameStop. Because, I mean, I was one of, back when we were, you know, blue-eyed, bushy-tailed, ready to take on the world. It felt like it was us versus hedgies and diamond hands, you know, to the moon. I've gotten to the point now where, I mean, I made a pretty good amount of money on AMC. I still have about half the position I think I started with. But now I'm selling cover calls on them and just continuing to collect premium. I've basically gotten to the point now where I don't feel like playing a game of chicken with 4.2 million other shareholders.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of ultimately what this has just become.
And I want to say congratulations to you because to be able to, you know, first of all, with AMC and GME, I think it became something personal. And when things become personal, when they develop a storyline of like, let's take down the hedge fund, you got to remember COVID lost a lot of jobs. 20 million jobs were lost in March of 2020, right?
Yep.
People are home, unemployed. Yep. Some of them didn't expect it. Others did. Some had savings. Some didn't. They needed somebody to look at and be like, this is the person we have to take down for this, right? And
right.
Society as a whole. And so when that storyline and narrative became personal, I think that's when it got dangerous. And so I got to say kudos to you for selling some, because it's easy to buy shares of any company because you're buying it an opportunity, but it's hard to take an exit, right? Because mm-hmm. that's what crystallizes the position.
Yes.
Is getting out. So when people say, you know, I got this many, should I sell some? I don't know. You know, it's yes. like, I don't know where it's going to go. Where do you think it's going to go to? I love when somebody has $70,000 profit delivering my mail asking me where I think it's going to go to. I don't know, bro. You bought it. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
You bought this thing. You should have some idea of like what the target is. And if you are confused about where it's going to go, it probably means you're surprised it's here. So take some profit. And I think you doing that, Kyle, is huge. It's big for a learning lesson. It's big to for your audience as well. Take that away to be like, look, always take profit. If you're not going to get paid when you have profit, when will you get paid? Right?
Yeah, that was a lesson I just watched.
Yeah.
one of my favorite things.
Oh, that really. I think that was a topic I gave you guys for your next podcast. I think you're taking questions for what you should look at, and mine was how do you prevent yourself from turning small gains into big losses? Because that's kind of what. I think that's like where the aha moment was from watching that latest lesson about managing risk and getting paid. And like you just said, you know, getting yourself paid. If you don't pay yourself, then when will you?
Exactly. And that's what turns it into a professional career mm-hmm. Type option rather than, because you can make all the money in the world, but deep down when you go to bed, you know that some of it is a fluke, right? You know that it's right. like, yeah. We've all done that. We're on socials, be like, check this out, Gucci pants, Gucci hats and all stuff. But you go to bed and you're like, oh man, like, I kind of just fluked this. And now you start to feel the pressure and you start to think, now I'm here trying to make money. And when you're trying to trade to make money is when you're going to lose all of it. It's like, it's not a, mm-hmm. I'm going out there to maximize my profit business. It's a, I'm here to manage the risk and maybe I'll lose some here and there, but overall as a balance, I'll be up more over a long period of time. So, you know, I think that's an important lesson. I think if AMC and GME did anything, I think it provided a very valuable education to the new investors who, you know, who needed it. At the end of the day, you're going to learn it. And I think if you learn it early on, it's the cheapest. I think the longer you get away with crappy investing rhetoric, the more it's going to cost you.
I think, Dan, you benefited hugely from that risk management as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. If it wasn't for the CVM blunder I made by purchasing shares and not putting them up, updating my stop loss, I'd be doing fantastic. immediately, as soon as I watched that risk management lesson, I was able to see a million things I was doing wrong on so many trades. I was a gambler. I was straight up walking into the shop to gamble and place bets like on a horse, not by reading charts. And
my favorite was the S&P, the strategy you're tearing out, the Borman strategy we've been calling it. One of our guests said this is something he likes to do, and you were finding success with it like three times in a row. I think you found success, and you were saying you wanted to go all in on that.
No, not with my portfolio. I wanted to roll every time. Everything I gained would be put into the next bet. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I had to talk you out of that. I was like, no, Dan, no, please don't do that. Yeah. You don't want.
I mean, the intention's good for that. It's just, you know, it inevitably something will come to teach you that lesson of why you shouldn't do that. It's not like I could say this to you know, be like, oh, high and mighty, like, look at me. But I've learned that the hard way, guys. I've gotten slapped around, you know, sideways, backwards, all around the place. And
I think we all learned that.
Yeah, I think you become a good investor not by avoiding challenges. I think you become a good investor by being punched so many times and falling on the ground that you just decide to get up once more than you fell, you know? And that's
right.
That's what's required. It's a fight. It's like, that's why it's such a hard business, is because the money seems easy. It all seems fun, but really the challenge of it is it's a fight. And every single day you're fighting. You can do this for 40 years. You're never going to find one thing that works. And you're like, put your feet up. It's like, oh, perfect. No more work. I'm going to retire, mm-hmm. you know? When that moment comes, I'm shorting you if you're a stock. Like,
yeah.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that was one of the things that I liked the most about the TradePro courses, is seeing you be honest about how much work this is going to be. And even though for me, it doesn't really feel like work because I enjoy it so much. I mean, this is the first time I've ever been excited to go to do my job, which this is my job now.
Congratulations.
Like I've never had that excitement. Thank you. But to be the honesty that you had with like, look, this is a business. You need to treat it like a business and you need to be constantly growing and improving and working and practicing. And it's not a get rich quick scheme.
Mm-hmm. And I think the honesty
and so many,
sorry, I was going to mention, I think the honesty is important because when you hit those tough moments, if you haven't been prepared for them, you feel like you're not doing something right. Mm. And you start looking for this holy grail to be like, what am I doing wrong? Where really maybe the journey that you're perceiving as being wrong is the exact one you need to be on, right? And I think that's the danger of people just talking about profits and showing off, you know, like something that always works. It's like, that's not the reality. And when you hit a challenge, I think it's important you learn from something that is real and honest so you're prepared to deal with it and not surprised by it. I don't think there's any market condition that loses more money than surprise, you know? You can be anything you want, but you shouldn't be surprised by anything. Like,
I actually want to do one last experiment with your programs. I want to put my wife through it and see what the difference is between somebody who has zero market experience or somebody who's fiddle fucked around like me and Dan have for the past year.
Yeah.
And then, you know, learning something. But did we learn a bunch of bad habits that we have to break? Or did we finally see a lot of the mistakes that we were making? And was the lessons more powerful because of that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question.
Do you have any experience with that?
So here's the thing. And I know that, you know, we're in a world where there's a lot of stuff that you could say that could be misconstrued. So I'm going to attempt to speak this out in from the rawest, most like, you know, beneficial point. I think that female investors, when they start out, now this is kind of like, you know, what is considered these days, like is it female energy? Is it's just female, whatever that means to the listener. Female investors start out and they have a little more of a focus on risk management. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that. We've seen our female traders kind of be a little bit more risk averse, whereas some of the male ones, and this is just keeping it super general, are more like risk takers.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because, you know, the females in our community who started out and invested in this were a little bit more afraid to take risk, but then were actually having larger win rates. So they'd win more often and lose less, but not be as profitable as quickly as most people would anticipate. And the other thing we found as a trend is that a lot of times if you start out without knowing anything in a structured program, I think that there's a higher chance of success because when you start out without a program, you don't know what you don't know. And sometimes the lessons you need to learn to make this a career could cost you a lot more capital than you have. And, you know, in extreme situations, people go in debt and then, you know, it's like, I don't want to admit that what I'm doing is wrong. I get more debt. I'm not going to tell anyone about it.
Right.
I'm going to keep trading. It has to come back, you know, like hodl, double up, double down, triple down, quadruple down.
That's the gambler. Yeah,
exactly. And you don't tell anyone about that. And it's like, you know, and you blow out and you lose your money at best, at worst, some really dangerous things can happen as a result. So I think that how you start is how you finish. And I think that at the very beginning, you know, I know that we're kind of in society, big fans and proponents of, you know, I'm going to learn the hard way, grind my way through it, never give up. But in trading, I think if you don't start out with a structured kind of program or be around a community who's following some structure and discipline, I think there's a big danger that you don't ever make it. I think that it's harder to unlearn a bad pattern than it is to start from the correct way at the very beginning. But if you really want to make it work, like you said, Kyle, right? You're like, I don't think this is a job. I love doing this. It's That's kind of the passion that'll get you through. Even if you start, like, no matter where you start and how bad it gets, you'll always find your way through to where you need to be because you got that determination. But not a lot of people start in this industry for that same motive, right? They're like, let me just make some quick money, or like, I'm going to just do this on the side. And you're going against professionals, you know, with a side hustle, it works out bad.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we can beat that professional hockey team over there. Let's give it a go, boys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think I can just jump in the lake and kill the shark. Like, what do you know?
Yeah. It's old. It's just an old slow shark. You can do it, George. Come on, jump in.
Yeah, and I play hockey because I'm from Canada. Everyone has to if they have a Canadian passport. And our hockey team's like that too, right? We're like, oh, man, like, we watch the game after the hockey games, and we'd be like, oh, why wouldn't he do the pass or whatever? One time I put a camcorder.
Yeah, I wish the Canadians were in town here. I'd show them how to make the shot.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So one time I put a camcorder and recorded our men's league hockey game, and I showed it to them afterwards. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these are the same people. Like, let's look at ourselves from an external perspective. These are the same guys out there chirping the professionals. And one of my buddies is like, you have that on slow-mo? I'm like, bro, I actually sped this up. So, we gotta remember, it's like everything's like that in life, right? It might be easy to log online, create an account, and start trading, but it's still a professional mm-hmm. space. And we gotta respect that.
One last thought on that. I do think I actually had a little bit of a leg up too, because I spent a lot of time studying poker in my younger days, like actually putting like a real, treating it like a business, keeping logs. You know, writing down win loss rates, expected profits, and analyzing sessions, like really took it seriously. And I think there's actually a lot of similarities between poker and trading, especially from a risk management point of view.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a huge advantage, by the way. It's I don't know if you know this, but a lot of proprietary firms back in the day that would hire traders to and give them money to trade, and then they split the profit. A lot of the prop firms mm-hmm. would hire former poker players and former athletes.
Oh, really?
And one of our most successful members at TradePro actually ranks very highly in the United States as a poker player. I'm not going to mention his name.
I'm not surprised. Yeah,
and he came in and he's like, hey, look, I play poker. I just need to equate the terminology of trading to poker. It'll probably take me a few months to get this. I might have a few questions to ask you. And I'm like, yeah, sure, man, no problem. 3 weeks later, he's like, yeah, man, I'm crushing it. I'm making more than I ever did in poker. I'm like, in 3 weeks, bro? Jeez. He's like, yeah, man, this is the exact same thing as poker, except I don't have to leave the house, you know?
Right.
Oh, man. That's good for him. That's awesome.
Poker is a huge advantage. Poker, you know, athletes, anything where discipline and risk management's taught, and also making decisions, right? Because mm-hmm. a lot of times we're trained to work for people who make decisions, but we're not really trained to how to make proper decisions. Like, think about it, in school and everything, right? It's all just packing your head with info. But there wasn't really a class called decision making. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, there
should be. And it's like, that's what trading is. You're making a decision. And one thing people don't tell you about decision making is there is no right decision in the moment.
Right.
You know? Like, these executives get paid so much money, and people are like, oh, why do you get paid so much money? Well, they make decisions because they have experience, and experience helps you make a good decision. But the outcome isn't known in decision-making time, and I think that's what makes trading so hard. And poker...
I take it even a step forward as far as the decision-making. I think a lot of people are afraid to make decisions at work because they don't have good managers who will stick up for them and say, like, look, you made the wrong decision, but you made it with the right reasons.
Yeah. For sure, man. And work, like, if you make a wrong decision, you get, you know, you get disciplined, you get talked to. If you make a right decision, how many times have people made a good decision and their research or work has been stolen and presented as somebody else's?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's sad. It's really sad because as humans, the way we've been conditioned as humans in modern society is probably the absolute worst way to be a trader. You know, it's like, it's hard because you look at trading and like, oh, as long as I know what stock to buy and I have money, you know, I take a little course, I can figure it all out. But really, it's more of an inner work to bring out that profitable trading than it is, you know, some kind of tool or finite formula that you can find. It's like, really got to dig down into who you are, how you feel about risk, how you feel about money.
Right.
You know, do you have fears and values that are negative around success? Because, hey, there's fear of success. Guess what? Some people are like, hey, I'd love to have all the money, but deep down, they have a fear of success. So, that's what I love about this business. It's all this thing combined and packed into one. And no matter who you are, no matter how you start, you have to deal with these things. And everyone has to go through the same journey. And I love it.
I love how everyone can take their own path. Like, no two paths are similar. Exactly. And they can still be equally as successful.
Exactly, right? It's like you're finding yourself within the market, and then that's your strategy. You can't just copy somebody else's and apply it, you know?
Yep. We've learned that.
Yep.
Me too.
I'm just going to buy all the options alerts that TradePro Order Flow tweets. I'll be golden. Yeah.
Yep.
You know what?
No, trust but verify.
Yeah, it's like the signals are very, like, there's a lot of groups that provide profitable signals. And even TradePro Flow, I think Sarah and I were talking about it. She's like, oh, I had a crappy week on TradePro Flow. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, it was only 64% profitable or correct this week. I'm like, Sarah, only 64%. That's awesome, like, you could win 40% of the time and be profitable, but I think it's not the signal, it's the decision that you make with the signal. And so we go back to this important word, right? It's like, how can five different people have five different results with the same signal? Mm. You know, and that mm-hmm. right there is the proof that, you know, these signal services and copying and mirroring trades and copying someone's trading plan will never work.
Right.
Because it wasn't developed with your, you know, the way your mind was designed, crafted, your values, your beliefs, your environment that you were around. All that has influence on how you make decisions. You know, it's like, it's a lot more of, how do I say it? It's like, it's a lot more of an inner journey.
You can't just buy and then think you're going to do exactly what they do. You have to incorporate it into your plan, which means it takes a lot more work. You got to study it and analyze it and do all the work that they did.
Exactly. And I have examples of this. We had a member who, and I'm not mentioning names again, but we had a member who for months made really good money with signals. And then one time decided to go against the signal and say, I'm going to just put more money in. I think this person is wrong. And it's like, all right, well, if you're getting in on a signal and they're giving you the exit signal and you're not taking it, now it's like, now you're introducing confusion in a gray area where at the end of that trade, how are you going to analyze what you did right? Was it a signal? Was it your thought process? If it's your thought process, why do you need mm-hmm. a signal? If it's just a thought, is it a plan? Is there a risk management to it? There's so mm-hmm. much that goes into it. So it's like, you could get somebody's profitable trades and find a way to screw it up. It's like, and you will. You know? Because the one
trade, yes, we know.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the one trade that person loses, they lose $500 you YOLO into the account, keep buying the dips, and you blow out your whole account. And you're like, these stupid signal services don't work. And I've been there too, man. Trust me. When I first started, it's like, I just want to follow somebody. I want to find the Michael Jordan in this industry. And, you know, I realized, like, you got to be the Michael Jordan. It's like Oprah. I remember watching Oprah with my mom, and there was one guy that jumped on the train tracks to save someone. And this stuck with mm-hmm. me. You guys are probably like, where the hell is he going with this? But watch this. I'll get back on the main road.
Right. Talked about everything else. Might as well talk about Oprah.
I was watching it. This guy's like, there's a dude laying on the tracks. Somebody help him. And then he was kind of stopped in that moment. Everything froze. Like, I got to be that someone and jump down and save the guy. So like, for me, mm-hmm. I kind of look at it this way too, is when in times of peak challenges or like signals relating back to that, it's like, you can't look to outsource the most important work. And in trading, that's the most important work, is taking the trade, managing the risk. And if anyone other than you does that, you know, they don't care about your money. They just...
Right.
That's the important part I want to mention. It's like, signals don't work. Trust me. I've tried so many. I've lost so much money at the beginning. And it was like, you know, I don't want a signal. Keep it.
Okay. Well, I think we're starting to run a little long here. So we hit the couple charts and then
let's do it, guys. I'm ready to go.
Maybe wrap this thing up. Dan, do you want to go first since you're trying to start beef?
Yeah. Well, you know, I see. I know why TradePro is like, oh, Disney is about, you know, we're looking for the turnaround, because I'm looking at the weekly chart. You could be looking at the daily, and I think it's made a very beautiful head and shoulders. But the most recent cycle, it failed to make a new lower low. So I believe that's why you guys are looking at it to turn around. But it's still like, I drew this really nice, pretty bear trend line that it's still holding down below.
Yeah, and so you probably connected that trend line with like the high around the 203 down into those tops, into where we are now, right? Like so you know, I think this kind of goes to cycles. And look, I got to say this, we don't know who's going to be right or wrong. I guess if you listen to this podcast 4 months later, you're like, haha, Dan stuck it to George, or you know?
Yeah, you'll know.
Right.
Oh,
I'm the teacher now.
That idiot, Dan. Exactly.
Dan Pro Academy. Here we go. You never know. But like, the way that I see it too is like there's cycles, right? And I think you mentioned it. I think, Kyle, you said how institutional absorbs the selling from retail. And then at the top end of the trend, they sell it to retail. So I think when you look at it from a cyclical standpoint of accumulation, public participation, and distribution are like three phases of the chart. You know, Disney got to a point, and Vicky loves this stock. I think he's got the long under 100 bucks. And Victorio's like a crossover of a fundamental. He likes things a little fundamentally, but then trades them more actively. You know, when we got long Disney, and I think he bought some for the Trade Pro account. Actually, I don't think I know he did. The streaming service was about to launch. There was a lot of exciting things. But just looking at it from a technical analysis standpoint, I think on Disney, there's some really good support between 150 to 160. And like if you look at where that low was on Friday, it was higher than the prior low. And then that candle is like a hammer bottom candle, right? At the 170. You see it on a weekly?
I'm looking on the daily.
Let me see on the daily. Yes.
Well, maybe I should do what you guys are doing.
The weekly is a hammer. On the daily, it's a pretty bullish pattern on a reversal. So I think as long as it holds support between like 155, 165, there's a lot of support there. And, you know, that's why the idea is for an extension higher. Is like if you look at it from the start from 83, it had an impulse wave higher to 203 and then a pullback. Disney hasn't seen a big pullback since the post-pandemic. You know, the stock's been on fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny you mentioned that support at 150, 165. That's where I think it's going to go. Like, that's my price target. I think, like, okay, I think Disney's going to pull back, but it won't pull. It couldn't pull back further than this because look at all the volume profile. It just shows up. Buyers loved it at 155.
Yeah, I like that level, to be honest with you. I think that 155 to 160, if I was looking to add to Disney, and I think there's, sometimes you got to distinguish between looking to get into a stock for the first time or looking to add to a position, right? And like if it was at 170 right now, I wouldn't be opening it for a new trade, but I would potentially consider adding to it because I got a profitable leg to support it, right? But I see like the 150 to 160, like 155 to 160 is a really big support. And I think people who are buying it will probably get wiped out, some shakeout, some week longs, hit that level. And that's an ultimate support because that was a prior high from the pre-pandemic run up on Disney. Well, you know what else you could do as well, Dan? Like, I mean, obviously, you guys listen to disclaimer of the podcast, but one thing you could do here is do a multiple entry. I think when you look to get all in on one position, it becomes hard because it's a binary decision. You're in or you're not. I think what you could do is like take the entry capital, split it into thirds, and say, hey, I'd like to get it at 155 to 160 so I can put a third there. But if it goes without me right now, if it only gets to 175 and rips the $200, I'll be pissed I'm waiting at 155, right? And what does that do? You end up buying it at 200 and you buy the top and then it drops. You know, it's like it's like this damn thing knows how to separate. Exactly, FOMO and chase it up.
Chasing
so what you
the
do
price.
Is add a third. Yeah. It's a good move because you're doing a smaller position, so the loss is going to be smaller, so you're managing risk. And then as it drops to the target you want, you're adding in or scaling into the position to build a full size right at the level that you find is a good support.
Well, it sounds like you guys are actually more on the same page than it sounded like initially.
Then, I mean, no beef. Yeah. I like...
I'll have to find someone else.
I can also fight the bear side of it if you guys want me to take the opposite angle. Is that trend line? You're right.
No, that's
and I would actually wait to see it break like 185 first. A lot of times people are like, well, if I get it for 177, why wouldn't I pay 177 instead of 185? It's like, because now you own it.
Confirmation.
But if it does hit 85, the probability is higher to keep moving because everything's moving on momentum these days. So I like it above 185 as well.
All right. Should we go to Pepsi next?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, PEP, I'm on the daily chart, and...
God, why didn't I ask George about Dr. Pepper? Shit!
All right, I'm looking at this nice rising wedge pattern that it's got. I've drawn out the trend line on the top and then the support line on the bottom. It looks like it's trading above its 50-day moving average. See that real nice doji, that it just hit yesterday, or I guess the second Friday.
Yeah.
I actually took out a small put position. I think it was trading around 149.30. Dan was nice enough to inform me that earnings were on the 13th.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to mention. Yeah.
Like, fuck. So, yeah, now that I've just learned my lesson about not supposed to be gambling on earnings, I basically got a week until I got to dump this thing. But I'm looking at it. The last three times I think it's hit that top of that trend line, I'm just looking at how severely it's gotten rejected. And I think there's room for at least, you know, a couple dollar profit on this. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I could see the short. I see the rising wedge for sure. You know, I said 150 above is a really big level. And if you look at that level, you know, it failed there in December 30th of 2020, around 148.
Mm-hmm.
And then it failed around the 147 marker as well in February of 2020. So those are really big failure points in the past that have caused big dumps. I mean, look, the first time it hit that level and couldn't get through it, it went down 30%. And the second time...
Oh, wow. Yeah, look at that.
It went down... How much did it go down?
To about 128.
Yeah, exactly. 12, 15%. Yeah, it went down. And so...
Yeah,
a lot. Now we're above that level. What I like about it too is like I look at the volume and not really necessarily just the volume profile, because for me, volume profile is timing. It's like when I'm ready to get into a position, I'll look at it as to where to put the limit order on volume profile.
Right.
But if you just look at the horizontal volume at the bottom, to me, it's like a gas pedal. It's like if volume's not increasing and it's equivalent of a car moving forward, but your foot's not on the gas. And so if you know that, you know that you're coming in for deceleration. It might still go, but not at the same pace until it stops, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is where Pepsi's at. Like I'm seeing upside. It's broken a prior high. But if you look at the last couple volume candles, it's actually been decreasing.
Yeah, and then those big dumps, when it was touching up against that trend line, the volume really came in heavy.
Yeah, on the downside.
I think, let's say 27th and then on the 18th.
What happened on June 18th? That's a really gross day.
Yeah.
It was either news or the market just got pummeled as a whole. But yeah, that's a candle that's kind of worrisome. But then we're also above that price. So like for me, for this one, if I were short, given that we've broken that top that's, you know, held off the buyers multiple times, once 20% dropped, the other one 15%. I'd probably size down a bit on it as well. But I think one thing that would help you is implied volatility goes up into earnings. And so even without the movement of the stock price, the Vega increase might actually help you offset some of the loss. So you could actually wait until, you know, 1 or 2 days before it and dump it. And even if you're wrong, still break even.
Yep. That's kind of what it, I mean, there's still the gambler in me that wants to say all-time high, earnings coming up, going to be disappointing, but... It's not worth it. It's not worth the gamble.
But you know what? Like, there's actually a study that says if a stock misses earnings by $1, it drops $3. And if it beats earnings by $1, it only goes up $1. So really, fear is three times greater than greed, you know, statistically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so you're on the right side of the trade. I just think that right before earnings.
Yeah, I just don't like the earnings.
The timing of it's a little bit, you know. And above 150, you got to, like, when I'm shorting a stock that's moving up like this, like the stock is up, this is almost pre-pandemic, is it? Yeah, it is. So when it's like that high up and I'm trying to short it, you know, I have a target. Anything above 150, I'd probably can it, try to sell it, save as much premium as you can on the option.
Okay. I did listen to some of the other lessons I think Vico was talking about as far as like sizing your position to a much smaller, like to your risk level basically, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I've been taking that one to heart with everything that I've been, when I find a trade now, because I want to jump in and put these lessons to use, right? What's the point of learning all this stuff if you're not using it?
Right, yeah.
But I've definitely sized down my positions to minuscule amounts compared to my portfolio size.
That's honestly great, because that's when you take away the learning, right? It's like you make less money, but you actually learn more. And I think...
Well, I think the main problem with that, though, is then it becomes to a point where, like, if the money doesn't mean anything to you, you're much more likely to just say, you know, screw it. I don't care if it goes to zero. It's just $100 or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's kind of double-edged, huh? Because you need to be practicing those skills of learning when to take the profits. But if the money doesn't actually mean anything to you, too, then it can make it a little more difficult to do that.
Yeah. And I think there's different personality types, too, right? Like, I think some people would want, like, if I don't have skin in the game, I'm not doing this.
I definitely have that feeling, yeah.
Yeah, and then and for you, then it's just like you skin in the game means different to you than it does to anyone else. It's like you have your own dollar value, and I do think your personality type is like, if I don't have skin in the game, I don't really care. I do think that you shouldn't limit yourself below that. Have skin in the game, and then that will force you to kind of practice risk management. Because if let's say $500 a trade is skin in the game, but you're only risking $100 for fun, five losses is now skin in the game. You know, it's like
right. So, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So you definitely want to like make it. Some people just are super risk averse, and for them, you know, definitely cut the trade size. But also, like even while you're learning, and we advocate for this a lot, it's like most people spend more time in simulation than they need to, and It's all about jumping in. And then now it's 2021 and nobody even sim trades anymore. Everyone just died.
Yeah. I know, right?
I got my Robinhood account. How hard could it be?
Yeah. I hope you don't have Robinhood still.
No, I don't know.
I can't wait 2 days for shipping. What makes you think I can wait for anything else?
Yeah, there's this comedian on Netflix that did a bit about Amazon Prime. He's like, Amazon Prime's too slow. He's like, I want Amazon before. Like, I want it as soon as I think about it, before I think about it. And he's talking about Uber Eats. He's like, yeah, I don't want right. you to just drop it on my doorstep. I want you to put it in my mouth, chew it for me.
Oh, that's Jim Gaffigan, wasn't it? I think that was his newest special.
Was
Jim?
It was.
I think it might have been. It sounded. I think I saw I think the it was same a guy one
from China. He moved to the U.S. Right, or was that the same one? It doesn't sound like a Jim.
What is it?
I forgot his name.
I thought it was Jim Gaffigan, the big pasty white guy.
I'm going to email you, and you can put it in the show notes because this is important.
Can you feed me? Yeah, I know.
There you go.
We strive for accuracy.
Kyle, do we have any fun and games for George?
I didn't prepare anything for the month end review. I think we got a
damn it.
The new theme song we decided to give him. I think that's
yeah. I was gonna say, guys, you've given me a jingle. You've given me an invite to be on this podcast. Is there a point where you might be spoiling me?
Well, I was actually gonna ask if you want to come back next month and do this all again. Well,
let's do it. I'd love to. Yeah, man. Let's. If you guys want, we could do a little bit more of a focus on stocks. I'm passionate about this. I hope you guys could tell. So when I answer, sometimes I go a little bit off the rails. If it wasn't Trade Pro Academy, it'd be off the rails.
If it wasn't, yeah, that's fine. If it wasn't all interesting, there might be a problem.
I don't recall laying any rails for this show, Kyle. Did you?
No. In fact, I think that's kind of the point of it.
Yeah, it's all off rails.
Perfect. Well, I love what you guys are doing. Always super fun to be here. And I thank you guys for having some of our Trade Pro members on, Victorio, Sarah, myself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Anytime they want to come back, I'd love to have them.
It's been so great. Yeah, we got to ship you guys some coffee mugs and some shot glasses.
I sent them already, actually. Did those show up to your office yet?
We had a few packages we haven't been in yet since Friday. I think we all kind of stayed away from the office today for one day.
It should be in there. I think you got some coffee mugs and shot glasses for you, Vico, and Sarah.
I promise you we'll use the shot glasses before the mugs.
I know you would. I think Vico said that because I let him know to keep an eye out for it. I think he said that he'd definitely get a lot of use out of that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That kid's, he's a savage. He's still young. He's single. And the weekends for him mean a whole different thing than me, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And my weekends are looking for new stocks to look at. God, come on.
That's what I do, too.
Right. Stupid holiday. Can't trade on a Monday.
I know, man. I still look at it that way. I look at these things as like, there's sometimes I'm doing things that I should be focusing 100% on. I'm like, I can't wait to go home and look at the charts. Or like flip open my phone. I'm like, I shouldn't be doing this. I don't really care. It's a red light, you know?
I can't tell you how many times I drove home from work with the stock ticker on my phone. I had to change my my sleep time on it so that way you quit going to sleep after 10 seconds. Where's it at now?
I asked a friend that worked at the dealership Mercedes. I'm like, is there a way you could hack this screen so I could put on it what I want? He's like, no, I'm not helping you trade while you're driving. And I'm like, damn it.
You knew me well. I used to work with a guy who'd read a book on his way to work. Can you believe that?
Wow. That's crazy.
Like a legit novel paperback. He'd have it on the steering wheel with his hands holding the pages.
Did he get to work more than the first day?
That's
phenomenal.
I'm not sure how well he retained what he was reading.
You know, there's something called speed reading. Have you guys ever looked into this?
Really big on it. Howard Berg, world's fastest reader, Howard Berg. I got his course when I was a kid.
No way. And I think that's where you should learn it too. I think kids, this is a big skill. Like, it changed my life. I'm able to go through so many books. And a lot of people actually know this, but it's kind of like the best kept secret, if you will. And I speed read. Unless I want to read for the love of what I'm reading, which is never. So always speed read.
Mm-hmm. Dan got his consequences for losing the bet last month. You want to guess what that was?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
After giving me 4 weeks of watching Jersey Shore, I gave him the choice between a awful book that might be so bad it's good, or a great book that I'm positive he won't enjoy.
So what did you choose?
Yeah.
He went with the great book, and so now he's got to read Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret by Judy Blume. Wow.
Kyle, I think you just making him think about that and taking that decision is like the cost of losing the bet. How would you ever do this to someone?
Yeah, the bets are starting to get a little out of control.
Yeah. I mean, I had to actually apologize when I watched an episode of Jersey Shore. It became very apparent that I went overboard. It was too harsh.
I love it, man.
Yeah, I think he kept asking me what the plot was. It's like, I don't know what to say. I just told you everything that happened. Like,
yeah, but what's the plot of the show?
I think the hardest job in the world would be like being a description writer for each show for Jersey Shore. Like, I'm.
Yeah, it's hard enough doing our show.
Yeah.
You guys are the best. That's so funny. But yeah, it was fun chatting. I think we should do it again. Let me know what you guys want and what kind of show.
Yeah, I'll send you some dates and times, and we'll get that on the schedule.
Cool.
For sure.
Do we need to do an outro, Dan?
Probably not. Folks, as you can tell, we're wrapping up. We're going to get George back again sometime. We'll let you know about that. Until the next episode, happy trades.
Bye, folks.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for joining us. You can find us off air at twobullsinachinashop.com. That's the number 2BullsInAChinaShop.com. Make sure you check us out. Download us on any streaming network. Blah, 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 blah. You know what to do. Rate, subscribe.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.